You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey, welcome on in. I'm jobless, so I got nothing but time to stick to my podcast. Off the Edge, the podcast with me, Cam Jordan. Just know we're going to talk about what it's like to be in Ghana, because I went to Ghana, Accra, Ghana this last week. Then, of course, we're going to talk about the games that happened. I'm trying to, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm trying to watch the NFL games, as well as bring in my guy, you know, Jimmy Graham coming up. I'm excited. So let's get in with it. First off, I went to Accra, Ghana. All my life I've been calling it Accra, Ghana. You know, back to the motherland. Dipped into Egypt a couple years back and was like, I have to get back to Africa one day. Had the opportunity to go to Accra. Wifey was supposed to go with me. Her mom was going to watch the kids. A couple days before the trip, her mom was like, can't watch the kids. I'm still working. I said, retire, woman. You're messing up this livelihood. She's like, you know, she's a strong, independent black woman. She refused to retire. It is what it is. My wife had to stay home with the kids. And I went to Accra. Like, I was like, yo, we're going to hit Ghana. Then I was like, Lagos is right there, Nigeria. It was like an hour flight. I was like, and then I could probably even finesse this Cape Town that I've been trying to get to all my life. But it's okay. Once her mom wasn't able to watch the kids, I was like, well, babe, you know, there's Lagos over there. And she was like, so you're just going to go extend your trip? Ah, I lost that battle so fast. It's weird. It's just some hills aren't worth climbing, because if I get to the top of the hill, I'm willing to die on it. I wasn't willing to die on this hill. So I submitted. And plus, I had to get back to the cast. What you want me to do from a magical, majestic beach from Ghana side? No, I got to be back here in New Orleans, baby, with these beautiful, you know, portraits of myself here for the podcast. I missed my family after 5 days. I didn't. I was in love with Ghana. You know, I went out there for a quick little commercial shoot with the NFL, which means I was on their time and their dollar. But I had time to myself. Went out there. There was some dope players out there. Was around a legend of the game. I mean, I don't know how much I can actually go into, because you'll see the commercial spot in a couple of weeks, you know, Super Bowl-ish. So when I landed, they were like, oh, you're tired, so we gave you the night off. And, you know, I took off at like 4 o'clock Wednesday. I think I landed at like whatever that is. Let's call it 9 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, I think. Get there, and I'm like, all right, what are we getting into? And they're, you know, my guy Saquon is there, Saquon Barkley. It's dope. My guy Tim Ellis from the NFL is there. His title is what, CFO, whatever that is, you know. The crew that's going to be partaking in it, I'm there at the bar. I walk in. I'm like, yeah, we're going. He's like, nah, man, you know, going home down. We got an early shoot date. I'm like, all right, it's cool. It's me tonight. And then, you know, just ordered some room service, and room service wasn't room servicing. It wasn't what I wanted. I didn't get on a 20-hour flight to not have indigenous food. So I had a fry and was like, nope, never mind. I'm going to crack open this book. I started this book, right? Which I thought I was going to watch movies on the plane ride. I thought I was going to do whatever. I finished this book in Accra the first night. It's The Fourth Wing by, I don't even know how to say her name, Alyssa Yabaros, Alyssa, whatever it is. This is a dragon book, sci-fi. This book, I was walking and there was a store in Atlanta. I picked up this book, The Fourth Wing, again, this sci-fi dragon book. Took me back to my Anne McCaffrey days, back when I used to want to be a dragon writer as a kid. Whatever, right? Just to see, you know, what it's talking about. Finished this book. Needed the second book. Downloaded the second book on the iPad. Finished that book, too, on the way back. But now I'm hooked, and apparently there's only two books out of this four book story. So now I'm in Accra, you know, my first full day in Accra, and I've got the day off because I think they switched my day with Saquon's day of filming or whatever it was. So now I've got the day off, and I'm like, I need to see what needs to be seen. So in Independence Market, I see, or Independence, the little, you know, the resemblance of whenever they became their own governance. We saw that. There's a couple of landmarks I had to see. And then it was like, I was like, all right, where does the national team, Ghanaian national team soccer play? So I saw that and I was like, all right, dope. What next? I was like, I need to eat food and I need to be food here. And then, you know, the way it was set up, there was always a chaperone with me and two security guards. There was like a whole thing. I'm like, yo, whenever I travel, I've never had this much activity around me. Like I go either with myself, with my boys, with my wife, but like, maybe hopefully there's a translator there if we were in like a super far country that, you know, isn't partaking. But this is Accra. Like almost everybody speaks English. At some point I learned that there was like dozens of dialects of their native language within the same very city. So as a, you know, barometer there, like all these different languages, the even playing field is English. And I said, hello, guess what I'm specialized in? I can go as hood as we want to. I can go as, you know, suburb as we need to get this point across. So here I am thinking, I'm like, yo, there's going to be a language barrier. There was no such thing. So now my confidence at an utmost high. We start walking these markets. So that I'm super chill, super simple. We walk into this, you know, I'm walking through this market, but there's a security guard on my right, security guard on my left. There's a chaperone behind me. I'm like, yeah, I can't do anything. So in this market, I ditch him. I felt like Aladdin Akbar, like just running through the market, dish them, break through, send off a text like, hey, I'll be back. So, you know, they were alarmed or whatever. So I go into a little shanty, whatever. I'm following my nose wherever it goes. I'm smelling through the market. Like, I was like, oh, that smells amazing. I need to try that out. They're trying to tell me what it is. Moink, moink, or something like that. I'm like, all right, cool. So then I'm checking that out. You know, I eat some food, some like, you know, I wouldn't call it street food because like I could visibly saw the grill, right? So I'm like, in my mind, any whatever is going to get cooked off, right? Any bacteria. I don't want to give you some fake Joe Rogan science. Just know, I was like, yeah, in my mind, this was making sense. 1 + 1 = 2. Hot, delicious, spicy chicken smell coming into my nose, plus it being on a grill equals all that bacteria probably getting burned off. That was my math. I had it there. Next thing I know, you know, I got flanked again. My security guard, my chaperone. And for the rest of the day, we walked the markets. And, you know, it was good times. Great. Ghanaian people are kind as they come by. The second day, we do the shoot. I'm walking through the markets. Got this, you know, got the NFL, New Orleans Saints gear on. I'm revved up. I get to, you know, meet this amazing kid. And I'm like, bro, you're Ghanaian. And he was like, no, I'm Nigerian. I was like, what? So we're shooting this commercial here, but he's either way, but super amazing just to even be involved in this, like this situation. You know, the NFL has that outreach program. And of course, legends like OC Omenyiure is there. The linebacker from the Browns, Jeremiah, is there and he's garbed out and got, I said, I need that. I like whatever this traditional garb is. My man has got this orange checkered, got gold dripping down. It reminded me of like, I'm gonna get you, sucker. If a lot of kids are not going to catch that reference, though, you know, these 90s kids are weird. But I'm gonna get you, sucker. Was this Wayne's comedy where it was like the OGs were dripped out in gold, and I was like, no, that's the vibe. I said, I need one of those. So you know, that second day I was there was a photo shoot. The third day, ended up. Oh, and then I found this hole in the wall. You know, my guy OC Omenyiure, living, you know, football legend, from. I believe Nigeria, but, you know, he's out there and linked with him and his boy. And I was like, yeah, man, don't take me nowhere. Like if I see any Central Europeans or if people of descent from there, that's not where I want to be. I want to go where the locals eat. I want to feel the fire. Like I need that jollof that, you know, I need that jollof that I'm gonna be proud to say, hey man, I got real jollof. Not that, you know, stuff they feed at the hotels or, you know what I'm saying? Just the local. So we go to this place, it's called Chez Clarisse, I believe. And when I tell you this thing was bussing, first of all, they were telling me about, you know, just some of the foods, right? We had jollof, and then you had the grouper that came out that had all these like sauteed onions and spices, and like the spice level is crazy work. We're going on like top tier. And I said, yo, this is where I need to be. You know, as I'm eating, there was nowhere other place that I wanted to be than in my plate of food. You know, they live by, they're like, oh, you have to try the plantains. I'm like, I'm not going to lie to you. Plantains, for all the hype that they get in different countries, mid. Now, you give me a yuca, I'm happy because it's the closest thing I'm going to get to a French fry. But they're like, oh, man, the spices we put on our plantains make it so much better. Here, mid. So here we go. You know, the food comes out, but then they got this green habanero hot sauce that is kicking my butt in the best way. We talk about the spice, the flavors, just the heat level is taking me there. I feel like I'm in Cabo and I'm over here eating one of those ghost chili peppers, but it's got so much flavor to it. Like, it's amazing. If you haven't figured out now, when I'm traveling, I really judge a place by the food that I consume. Like, a lot of people, like, you know, my wife, she's very up on the historic sites. Oh, we went to and saw this painting and the architecture, you know, my dad is huge. He's an engineer, huge on architecture. Oh, man, well, this building was in 18, you know, set up in 1755. And this one, the residence that they had here, man, I'm judging a place directly by food. Is it cracking? Is it bussing? What's it like? How do we socially convene? And that's over food for me. You know, so the highlight would be probably going to this bar, Honeysuckle, trying to watch the NFL games. You know, got to watch this game while a live DJ was hitting nothing but Afro beats. Good food was flowing in. Then I'm trying to watch this game. The first game was probably like 10 o'clock at night. The next one was like 3 a.m. And now I understand the commitment level because there were so many people in that bar trying to watch these games. It was dope. I sort of love, you know, Dan Campbell's team over Detroit, Jared Goff, Aaron Glenn, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, you know, get a win over Tampa Bay and rolled into this NFC Championship week against the 49ers, which Brock Purdy, there's so much, you know, it's crazy how there can be so much hype around a player for 1 year, and then the next year, all of a sudden, he's taking steps back, which he's clearly not, helping lead his team. You know, I call him a Chandler guy, but he's not. He's Gilbert kid from Arizona, helping lead the Niners into an NFC second NFC championship game this upcoming week. Then, of course, you've got Baltimore Ravens and Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC game. I don't know. Just thinking about the Bills, the hype that was around the Bills Chiefs game. Is there a chance the Bills will never get to an AFC championship game if they have to face the Chiefs? Because at this point, postseason, they're undefeated. The Chiefs beat the Bills, what is it, now four times? That's not a... Okay, anyways. But when we come back, I'm going to bring in my guy, Jimmy Graham, on Off the Edge, the podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I've got here on Off the Edge with my own podcast, but I feel like it's not my own today because I got to bring in one of my guys I looked up to when I got to the league. You know, probably literally and you know, figuratively speaking, standing at 6'9" or whatever you want to call yourself. But you know, a teammate when I first got to the Saints, and I watched him leave, go to Seattle, become the highest paid tight end, and then he went, you know, other places and came back to the Saints this past year where he was my teammate. To finish off, you know, maybe finish off. We'll get to it. On such a phenomenal career, 13 years in the NFL. We could fight for 14, but it is what it is. You know, 5-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All Pro, a man who sued the NFL. You know, a man who knows no bounds. Jimmy Graham, my dog, my tight end. You know, my brother. I appreciate you hopping on the pod.
Always, man. I know we've been talking about it for a long time, man, but it's cool to see, you know, like how far you have come since those meager days of your rookie year, you know.
Man, yeah. Just think about 2011. If I would have had a podcast in 2011, I would have lost my job. What, like, would have got kicked off the team?
Oh, 100%. I think half of us would have been probably gone. You know, I mean, honestly, it's such a different era. You know, this whole podcast era has done so much to expose, not expose, but to introduce like fans into so many players' interests, so many players' lives. And, you know, I just think it's something that's really elevated the game for sure.
Man, it's like you look over and Michael Parsons has a pod. You know, it used to be like guys would have to retire first, you know, yeah, the Marcus Spears, the Ryan Clarks, like, you know, and you had to have like some accolades and some, like, you can't just be anybody, you know. It took Nate Burleson had to go to Good Morning Football first and then go somewhere else. And then goes, and he played like 11 years in the league. Like, he had to work his way up and now he's that guy. But, you know, now again, so now you got guys that, like, you know, Max Crosby has a podcast. Von Miller has, you know, has a pod. It's all these guys across the league that you're getting that in-depth feel. And, you know, me and Mark used to have one and now it's just me. Just like, just like my teammates do, bro. They leave me and I wish them better. And he's on TV killing the college scene. And I'm just holding down a little pot.
Yeah, but you'll be doing the same thing whenever you retire, man. You got a big future, as we all know.
hey, that is to be seen. But while we're here in the NFL, we're going to have a great time.
No doubt.
We're the only two of the sort of, like, we were these consecutive years after the New Orleans Saints Super Bowl. So, like, I just feel like we're old enough to remember them having a Super Bowl, but not old enough to participate and just, like, wanting to be part of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back, you know, I mean, I can go back to my rookie year and you know, I remember the first time I was in the ones huddle with Drew Brees. It was Drew Brees, Marcus Colston, Lance Moore, Reggie Bush, Jeremy Shockey, and the best O-line in all of football. And he rattled off this play, and I didn't know what he was talking about. I mean, he said it so quick. He said it probably 10 times faster than Chase Daniels. So I just basically just stayed there and stared at him. And he said, "Hey, just run an out route." I was like, "All right, thanks." You know, I mean, it was to sit in that huddle with all those stars. You know, I mean, Jeremy Shockey was a rock star. Reggie Bush, one of the most famous guys in the NFL. Obviously, Drew Brees. You know, the Saint, and, you know, to sit there and be a part of that after a year before being on a basketball court, man, right. there was no, like, every time I ever think about, or hear somebody say, "Oh, life's a simulation." Well, that was my simulation moment for sure, man. You know, obviously, all of a sudden sitting there and, you know, basically being in a video game. It was crazy.
Man, for those that don't know, Jimmy went to the U at the very end, where maybe they weren't the U anymore, but, like, you know, it is what it is. Play basketball there. At least we know that was good basketball. You know, it was football.
Listen, we still had a great team. Obviously, when I came in, there was Devin Hester. Greg Olson was still there. You know, I mean, we still had guys. We just, you know, kind of weren't figuring out kind of the way to win. And then, you know, obviously some things haven't really rolled our way within the last while, but
I hear you, but at least, like, you guys still fight to be good. Like, you know, what was that 2009, 2010 Emerald Bowl, whatever that was, Cal beats University of Miami in a bowl game. But, like, that was the end of Cal.
I mean, that was the last thing you guys ever did, you know, unfortunately. And now I love our current coach. I think he's doing great things there. And, you know, obviously being able to be back here in Miami, get back involved with the program. I might be on a couple board seats and, you know, really
watching the NIL money roll out.
Yeah. Got to get that. And honestly, the biggest thing with the University of Miami is a stadium. You know, just playing at Dolphin Stadium just doesn't have to feel like the Orange Bowl does. And, you know, they really need somebody who can raise money and push towards maybe putting a small tight stadium in this place called Tropical Park down in the Gables. I mean, it'd be the hot ticket of Miami. And obviously the city would be able to use that. And we'd also be able to throw, you know, the state championships there and just do all kinds of things that kind of the Orange Bowl was. Right. We really need that back for the university.
Mm. If that happens, let me know so I can buy some land out there. You know, before them plans hit.
I'll definitely let you know.
All right, perfect. Bro, you've been such a great teammate especially, like, my whole career, you've been my guy. But, like, this year, I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. I wanted so much more for you this year than you know. What was it? What was the astronomical rate? It was like six targets, four touchdowns, Jimmy Graham. And I'm like, so why? You're on the sidelines hyped up. I'm on the sidelines hyped up. But the fact that it makes you that much more like better of a teammate in my eyes is this year is like you were never down, bro. Like you were consistently like giving juice to everybody. You're on the sidelines, bro, just like amped up, hulked out. And I'm like, feed the man.
You know, man, with me, it's all about winning, man. That's all I care about. And you know, kind of one of the number one things I want to do, and the only reason that I decided not to retire and come back to New Orleans was I wanted to mend a bunch of those fences that, you know, that had kind of gotten burned after I got traded. And obviously after I sued the NFL, but for me, man, there's nothing better. Or in my opinion, I remember how close everyone was when they got to that championship. And man, that's all I've ever yearned for my entire career is that opportunity to go with my brothers and make that march into the Super Bowl. So, you know, for me, you know, I mean, even if I'm not up or if the opportunity is not mine, one, I know I'm gonna be ready for it because, you know, we always ready to eat. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not a question of if we will be ready, it's we will. And we already know what's going to happen when those opportunities come. But, you know, man, I knew I was there also to help. And, you know, I kind of as a mentor for a lot of the younger guys. And then obviously my time with Juwan was incredible this year, you know, just especially the way he finished the season. I love to see it. I mean, he puts in the work. So, you know, I mean, I know my role now is a little different, obviously being 37 years old. You know, I'm always be a competitor, man. I think no matter who it is or where it is, if you get in a rezo, man, you know, in a big unit's always ready.
Always ready. It turned up. Bro, this year you snagged one of them things. It was like it was too easy, like over the top. Wasn't even for the tutty. It was in the red zone. Yeah. Over the top, must need like third down and like 12 or something like that. Snagged on top. I'm like, and this is why you send it. Send it. Used to call him Carrot Top. Can't call him Carrot Top no more. Like, send it Jimmy G.
Next
series, you scored a touchdown. It was like, you came over to the sideline. Was like, I'm him. I'm him. Was him. I've been him. I am him. And I was like, message.
Yeah, you know, man, it's just like, obviously, man, I love the game. That's what I'm going to miss the most is kind of that, just the hype with your teammates, man. There is nothing like
so that tweet, the all love, whatever you say, bro. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, he just meant like the season's over. That was it.
I mean, nobody set me up. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I was inactive for a couple games and whatnot. So, you know, I don't know how people feel about me. I mean, I know that I can still run. I can still get open. You know, I'm still big as shit, so.
Giving out work at practice. Giving out work at practice.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like first coming in and not playing for a year, I knew the big question was like, can this guy even move? You know, I mean, wasn't this guy playing a decade ago? But with all the biking I do, and you know, I'm kind of crazy when it comes to diet and everything, man. I already knew it. I already knew like once my hamstrings got used to the cutting that I was going to still be able to get open. So, you know, it was just nice to be able to prove it kind of on a daily basis, especially in practice.
Facts. I mean, that's just it. You might have, like, after taking a year off, there might have been a cheat code, honestly. Like, let your body heal. Like, in the offseason, it takes you 3.5-4 months to be like, I'm good again.
I mean, 100%. I mean, really, so if you can remember how kind of things went kind of in the middle of my career, I get traded.
With the knee brace.
Yes. I mean, I get traded for a first-round pick. I have some life stuff that went down the offseason. And then week 10, the highest paid to ever live, I completely blow my knee up. And Victor Cruz called me and he said, hey, man, this one's impossible. You know, we had the same injury. And I'm looking at my career and, you know, I'm trying to make it, you know, a Hall of Fame career. And I'm looking at it like I might not even play another snap. So to sit there and be on crutches, not weight bearing for 10, 11 weeks, I had to learn how to walk, learn how to jog. And in that season, my patella actually wasn't healed completely. But as you know, we got to play. Got to be on FBO. Can't miss games. So I played the whole season with an incomplete patella. Ended up making a Pro Bowl. But basically every season after that, I was having like minor surgeries, just cleanups and stuff, just because I really wasn't able to let my knee completely heal because the window in the offseason is just so small. So I was just kind of always building up for the season and then this degradation of my quad and my knee, what happened during the season. So taking a year off for me, man, it changed everything. Like this is, I mean, my knee right now, my knees are stronger than they've ever been. And it was from that year. And then obviously the bike, you know,
right.
When you're on a bike, yeah, man.
You come to the Saints and you walk through the building. You're like, bro. He's like, yeah, man. I just a car hit me while I was on my bike, and I made sure the car was okay. So, the hell you on, Jimmy?
Facts. Well, no. I mean, well, obviously, I lost a little bit of weight, so I was wondering. So once I got hit by that car and just ate it, I was like, man, I could probably still do this football thing.
Can we just talk about this? Like, this was an off season. This is like, hey, you took a year off, but like, I don't know if I'm coming back to football. Yeah. And so you're biking down, and where was it? Miami.
Yeah. So I'm biking down to Miami and I'm trying to prepare because I got some 100-mile races to head to. And then I ended up going to Italy to ride across Tuscany, which is like 300 miles. So I was just training. I was on my way back to the boat and I had left the Peloton. So I was just kind of by myself. And about a week earlier, there was this like there's a light where there's kind of like a quick left turn. And every day I used to go by there, I was like, man, if somebody doesn't see me here, this is going to be dangerous. But, you know, I kind of kept alert. And then literally a week later, I'm just going. I'm like hitting like 20, 25. And I look and I'm like, does this guy see me? And I'm like, I don't know. And he just yanks into me. And I mean, that's really all I could do is just kind of brace for it. He hits me. I go flying the bike. It was a Mercedes SUV. It hit me. And then the whole bike ricocheted on my right leg. And I go flying through the air, land on my back. My helmet like splits open. Thank God I was wearing a helmet. Obviously, right. If you're on a bike, always wear a helmet. Never think you don't need a helmet. And so at first I thought I honestly thought that I broke my femur with the bike. The bike was completely shattered. It shattered in like six places. Everything was tore up. But
street bikes is light and built for speed.
Yeah. And the bike wasn't cheap. So the bike was, yeah, it was like a $20,000 bike. But so we got to replace. We got a crash replacement specialized. Shout out. I appreciate it. But, you know, I ended up getting stitches at the hospital. But, you know, I was on a bike 2 days later, you know, and everything was fine, man. All was good.
What type of bike is it? Because now I want to know, because like I've got an Orbea and I thought my Orbea is a beautiful bike. And I was like, $7,000 bike. I was like, I'm top of the line. Like I had to work out a deal with them because I was like, I'm not giving you.
No. They're pretty. And you got to think about also the components. So my old bike was an SL7 S-Works Specialized, but my new replacement was an SL8, which is kind of their newer update, which is beyond better, like in every way. The problem with the SL7 for me, because I weigh so much, is every time I would get up to sprint, like I have my max wattage is 2000. So when I go to sprint, I could feel the bike like flexing beneath me, like nasty. Yeah. Like it just didn't feel right. And then once now with the SLA, it's got more stiffness. It's more aero. It's like everything you want. And then my other bike, my climbing bike is a Pinarello Dogma. And that was the most expensive one.
Bro, you have a climbing bike? See this? Yeah. I'm in Arizona, so I don't have hills, bro. I've got flat land.
Yeah. So basically in Miami, I have a aero bike, which is really my SL8 now, which is on a one by on the front. So I got a big chain ring on the front because we're just on flats. So I can just rip. And really the object of that is because you're pedaling constantly for like 3 hours, you're behind people, you're in a Peloton, you're trying to do these sprints. But a climber needs to be lighter and also needs a completely different gearing on the back, because being this big, you're going to be like when I'm up there in North Carolina or I go out to Colorado or I go to Europe and bike.
Bro, ain't no jokes. The mountains are no jokes. Bro, I told you about that. I was in Bilbao and I died. I died three times. I felt embarrassed. I was like, no, I was like, bro, I go 15, 20, 25 miles in a day, like on just whatever. He's like, yeah, we're going to go for a 13 click. And I was like, 13 clicks. I was like, that's like 6 miles, 7 miles, whatever that is. I was like, I got that. Bro, I had to stop three times, just like embarrassed.
Oh, yeah. No. Biking is the hardest, one of the most competitive things I've ever done in my entire life. What these guys on the Tour de France are doing is, I mean, it's they're basically killing themselves every day through a 21-day period. Most of those guys have like rhabdo. They're completely wasted. They lose all this. I mean, they're doing all they can just to hold on. But when you're in the mountains, man, especially guys our size, it's so much work. The amount of wattage. So the mountains is watts per kilo. that's how fast you know you can go up mountains. And obviously, we weigh way too much to be on a bike doing shit like that. So we're working 10 times harder than anybody that's smaller. 10 times.
Man, like I see the calves going. I'm like, bro, I'm pumping. I'm killing this. I'm killing this right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not.
You take off this,
you know, the car takes you out. You take out the car.
Yeah.
You hit the ground, bro. Your splits. You get up. You shake it off. And that makes you be like, all right, I'm back. I'm ready for football again.
I think I can do this. But also, because all the people I do and train with on a bike, I kept telling everybody just how great my knee felt. You know, I was like, man, I feel unbelievable. And plus I was, I remember like I did like a week loading period before I went down there. Just so I was like, because I hadn't ran or cut since 2021. I hadn't done anything. I hadn't seen a ball in the air. I mean, I didn't do anything. I just showed up. So when I was running, I felt bouncy like I used to, you know, like back before the knee happened. I was like, man, I feel like I can do a backflip right now. And so when I went down there, you know, obviously, man, I still had the speed, still could jump. And I can honestly say it was because of the bike and what it did for my knee, 100%.
Jeez, bro, you came into, what was that, off season? Whatever that was, you were like, you came to the build, and I was like, yo, you're not gonna text me and let me know you coming back, bro? I'm like, what's good? I was like, you on some Jari, Evans, Jermon stuff? I was like, what you want? You're like, nah, bro, I'm running this. I was like, I think I gotta run a 40 at like 8. I was like, he's like, nah, I'm just gonna go run some routes, whatever it is. Bro, you came out to practice the next day, bro. I was like, and Jimmy's back.
It's crazy.
Tyrann Mathews walks up to you. You're like, oh, you coaching big dog? I'm like, you don't see this. You don't see like, the pads?
Bro. Nah, I'm out here. I'm out here just with you. It's funny to see, you know, Matthews, man. We have battled so many times on separate teams. You know, I remember when I came in, his rookie year, he was talking all this cash in the media before we played, and Sean Payton was all over me about it. Sean Payton put some, like, DB on me every down in practice one-on-one and was like, the honey badge is going to be all over your shit. Honey badge. And so going to that game, I mean, I was ready to die. I was like, I'm going to murder this dude. I ended up doing pretty well at that game, but we ended up meeting up a couple times in Seattle, man, and just have battles when he was in Arizona, man. I have so much respect for him and just how he handles his business. And
yeah, because he comes up to your hip.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's like unbelievable how productive he's been and how special he is. You know, I mean, especially at his size or height, you know, it's just like unreal. His intelligence of the game, his like nose for the ball is just beyond special.
Crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Like always just has a knack to be where it's at. I've never got a chance to ask you out of, you know, you've seen what Jay Cutler, Aaron Rodgers, of course, Drew Brees, you know, you had Russ. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite quarterback?
Man, I have my favorites in different ways. You know what I mean? Like, I break things down on just how they are as a player. You know, and all three of them are completely different, like human beings, basically, just how they operate, even on the field. Obviously, me and Drew, the connection. I don't think there was ever anything better. I think now when you see guys like Travis, and San Fran, you know, it's like that was also based on a lot that me and Drew were able to do, obviously, alongside of Gronk and Brady. You know, when me and Drew were together for those 5 years, the numbers we put up and what we were able to do, it's really just the connection was so special, man. He knew exactly what I was doing and I knew what he was doing. It was almost like we could read each other's thoughts. And then obviously went out to Seattle. They're more of a run team. So, you know, for me, they're like, hey, I know you're used to getting 100 balls a season, but if you get 60 here, you're going to break every record. I mean, I think I still have all the records, but it still was only like 60, and they were right. It was different because we just ran the ball so much and a lot of play action, a lot of scrambling. But with Russ, I mean, just kind of how he was like never down, like ever about anything, you know? So we'd be down by 3 touchdowns. He's like, all right, one more, we're going to. Like he's always saying, and so like it makes you believe it, you know. And there was times when we came back, and when you know other times we would have just packed it up and went to the next game. But man, he was always so positive about everything. And then Aaron, when it comes, I don't think I've ever seen anybody throw the ball like Aaron Rodgers. No. You know, my time there wasn't the greatest. Obviously, timing sucked. You know, my first year, Mike McCarthy gets fired. That was an absolute mess. And then the second year, you know, Matt LaFleur comes in with a new offense, doesn't really give Aaron any power to do what he wants. So we made an NFC championship, but our offense wasn't great because basically he wouldn't let Aaron, you know, actually change the right play and do these certain things. But when it comes to tossing the rock, man, I don't think live I've ever seen anybody throw the ball like he does ever. Just everything that he does, dude. I mean, it's like artwork, like the way that comes out of his wrist and the way he flicks it. It's just stupid, man. Like we're doing like drills, like red zone drills. No, like 2 minute, and we'd have like 5 seconds left. He'd moving on like the logo, and this dude would just scramble around for a little bit. He'd be looking over here, and he would throw the ball to the right, not looking at the receiver one-on-one on the right side. I'm like, how do you even do that? Like, it's just – and the ball would just sling right to him. It's just crazy. I mean, his arm by far the best. His arm by far the best I've ever seen.
I mean, you know, I don't want to just take credit for that. You know, he'll probably claim his junior college Butte out in California, but he's a Go Bears guy. You know, University of California. 100%.
It's right, you too. Who else right now is you know, at the top of the game like you guys are?
Somebody would say like, you know, there's an NFC championship game coming up. And, you know, I think Detroit Lions are doing really, really well, coached really well by just a myriad of great coaches. But you would say the face of that would be a Cal Bear, you know, good old Jared Goff. The last first rounder to be drafted out of the University of California, Berkeley, at number one.
I'm so happy for him, man. Him and the head coach, that whole city deserves it, man.
Did you play with Dan? You didn't play with Dan.
Come on, bro.
No,
Dan was almost my coach because the year right before I got traded, they had fired my tight end coach and they brought him in. So I was supposed to be talking to him and then I got traded. So of Seattle.
You sued the NFL. Who do you know sues the NFL and then sort of wins? Like didn't win to you, like you wanted to be paid wide receiver money, but you know, sued them because you were out in the slot like 70% of the time versus what your tight end situation was. Sort of wins and then you know becomes the highest paid tight end, resets the whole market. First 10M tight end. Oh.
I reset it twice. But what was interesting was none of that should ever even happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, they never even offered me a contract to start with. You know, they said that my agent told me, hey, they're going to
franchise. The Saints didn't?
No. Oh. Now, you're welcome. Now they pay guys who deserve it early, right? Back then, they were playing hardball. So, you know, like guys would basically be franchise, go free agency, or they would play hardball. You have to sign something that wasn't really where your market was. But, you know, basically they said, well, the franchise tag is so cheap that we're not going to offer you like a contract. We're going to franchise you twice. Then you'd be 30 and we'll get rid of you. Right when they said that, I was like, all right, bro. Like, there's no way that's happening.
Ain't no way.
Well, especially the way I played, I was bound to get hurt. Like, it wasn't a chance of if, it was when and how bad. Because, you know, that was the old school, over the middle. All we ran was basically all go special. And I was getting tattooed across the middle. So, you know, I mean, I had to find guaranteed money. So
had to. And you got it, though. But yeah. you being over Seattle for an extended period of time. And then now Pete Carroll, you know, retiring. Did that have any impact on you? Like, what was Pete Carroll's legacy like?
Man, I had a special relationship with Pete. Obviously, they were a big part of that trade. Pete was phenomenal with me as far as like letting me fly into work. You know, he wasn't tripping about the planes and the cars and all the extracurricular stuff.
Wait, when you say fly into work, what you talking about?
Oh, like, so my first week on the job, John Nordstrom, who used to own the team, he sold it to Paul Allen, but he was still very close because, you know, his friend owned it. So he used to come into work all the time. So he comes in, he's like, hey, my name's John Nordstrom. I used to own the team. I heard you're a pilot. And I was like, yeah. He's like, do you have your seaplane license? I said, no, but I've been thinking about getting that Jack Brown, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, well, I flew in. If you want to go out and see my seaplane. I was like, yeah. So we walk out to the dock and literally right on the bottom of Lake Washington, he had this thing called a Beaver on amphibs, which is like this old school warplane that Canada was built in Canada. A bunch of them went to Vietnam. And so we got in this thing and we went flying over the city, man. And a week later, I went and got my seaplane license. And then a couple months later, I bought one and restored it. So I bought one that fought in Vietnam and so had it fully rebuilt. So the next year when the plane was ready, like three times a week, I used to fly into work. So I lived at the top of Lake Washington. It was like a 45-minute drive. It was kind of far, but it was a 5-minute flight. So I used to just take off. Sometimes I would like live stream it and then I would just land maybe 5 minutes and I get out tied up and go to practice. So yeah, it was nice.
And it like connected to the facility, of the facility or like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Like where the where park, does,
like you fly yeah. from the crib. So you drive to your yeah. plane from your house, which is yeah. a couple minutes and then you fly yeah. down.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally fly down the lake, literally 5 minutes. I land. It's like, you have to talk to one of the towers there's a little one down there. There's a little one that they make. I think it's one of the Boeings they make down there. And you just basically coast in, you get on the radio. Then I just literally pull up to the dock. I jump out, tie it to the little floating dock. And like, I have my little like parking space number, like Jimmy Graham's.
Yeah.
And then you like go through and that connects right to the player's parking lot. And so you just walk up. So people would like coaches would watch me fly into work. Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Who the hell's pulling up Jimmy? 88. You don't see the 88 spot? Come on.
But it was also cool because that's when I started doing the Wounded Warrior stuff. Mm. So we used to bring in sometimes on either Monday or Tuesday, we'd bring in a Wounded Warrior and we give them a full tour of the facility. We gear them down with EK. We give them a jersey. And then I would take them on the dock and I would fly them and I would actually teach them how to fly. So we'd be over Lake Washington. I'd be there with a Wounded Warrior flying, and then we'd go back. I'd drop him off and then go home. I mean, it was a pretty cool experience for sure.
So he didn't come down on you like the Cowboys came down on our dog, Brandon Cooks. B. Cooks had, you know, with Dak and Mike up on his plane.
Yeah.
It was you can't do that. We didn't even hear, but like you doing that was like a, hey, man, hey, you guys flew before. My guy Jimmy would take you on a plane.
Yeah, well, the Saints, when I was young, tried some of that. That's why I was pretty quiet. Like, I didn't have Instagram until, like, way later than most people. One of it, because I was, you know, I'm kind of private, but I was definitely being private about the flying thing because I knew it was going to be an issue. So, basically, I had, like, four or five licenses by the time they found out, and I already owned two planes. So, because they were like, hey, we want... Like, you can't be in anything that isn't a jet, that doesn't have two engines or a co-pilot. And I'm like, well, I already got an aerobatic plane, bro. So that's not happening. And that's it. That was really the end of it. I told them, like, an aerobatic plane, I'll wear a parachute. But that's about it. I mean, and then now, you know, I'm a commercial, multi-single. Yeah. You know, I've got everything now to where I'm beyond proficient and basically everything that I fly or anything. And but I've taken up a lot of teammates. I mean,
coolest flight moment. You say, coolest. I mean, I'm gonna say Blue Angels. When I saw it, I was like, yeah, Jimmy flew with the Blue Angels. Like, get the French door out of here.
I would say last year in June. So I'm the honorary commander of the Homestead Air Force Base down here in Miami, which is also the home to our world-renowned MACOs, which is our F-16 fighter squadron. They've been deployed in various things over many years. Right now, some of them are working as presidential detail up in Washington.
Hey, don't drop no classified and get my canceled.
No. It's not classified. You can look all that up online. Okay. But we so in June, they ended up having a D model F-16. So I got to fly with one of my good friends from the MACOs and it was incredible. You know, the week before I had to go through all the like survival stuff and like in case you get in the water and all the cockpit stuff. And obviously it had a full live ejection seat and all this, you know, the oxygen system. But, you know, to be able to take that down south. We're right over the Keys. Key West, we're kind of out over the water. We had between the ground and 60,000 feet. And man. 60,000, yeah. And to be able to, oh, yeah. And to,
crazy work.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. And to be able to go that fast, you know, do the various things that we did, and the flybys that we did was just magical, man. It was everything that I always
do. To put in perspective, like a commercial flight, you get on, you know, Delta, Southwest, United, yeah. Fly Emirates, you're going, what, 10,000 feet in the air? Are you going that high?
Yeah. You're between the 30s. So you're 30 to 35,000. Those are mostly where those fly. All the bigger jets, like all the private jets, they'll fly like higher 40s and then the 50s. But
and you're in the 60s.
Yeah. Well, they had to block out that amount of space for all the maneuvers that we're doing. And so we would have enough to be able to climb and do some of these awesome, interesting military maneuvers. Yeah, it was really cool.
That's crazy. Yeah,
really cool.
All right, so now I almost said football's out the way, but it's on the aside, right? On the aside. You're not saying full retirement, but you possibly could come back. Anyway, so if this is retirement, during the season, you talked about rowing across the world or whatever the hell that was. Are you still talking about trying to sail across the world or continent to continent? No, is that a thing?
Yes. So there's been an update. The most recent update. And we're all in on this thing now. So apparently someone had read that I was trying to sail around the world. And so they ended up reaching out and asked me if I would think about trying to break a world record. And unbeknownst to me, earlier last year, one of my very close friends, he's been a CEO for 23 years. He just retired. He's working private equity now. And I told him at a pub at his graduation, because he also got his MBA from Cambridge. I told him, hey, because he'd been asking me to do this for like 8 years. And I said, okay, we're getting a little banged up. And I said, he's like, you're the only person that will do this with me. So will you do it? I think it'd be an incredible experience for us both. Very challenging, a great opportunity. So the person that reached out to us was on the national, the U.S. National Open Ocean Rowing Team. And so now we have a meeting in 2 weeks all together, and this is all the beginning stages of what we're going to do and attempt. But we're going to attempt in 2025 to set a world record by rowing across an ocean with a four person team, and it's a 4-person mixed team.
Mixed team being men and women.
Yes.
Two women, or like
it was going to be that, but now there's we're actually taking one of the shorter routes to start with, and then the next we're probably going to race. So the first route that we just decided basically a week ago, and our first training camp is going to be in 2 weeks, because one, it's going to be hilarious, because my boy rode in college, the other guy who is actually married to the girl we're doing it with. Well, she's got a gold medal for open ocean rowing, and the guy is actually Tulane's rowing coach. So I'm going to be back in New Orleans, and we're going to meet about where some of these charitable contributions are going to go to, which are probably going to be young kids in the New Orleans area to expose them to certain things. But we're all going to, it looks like, attempt to row across the Arctic Ocean. That's going to be 2025. Now, you know, I'm a Miami boy. So,
bro, you know how cold that's going to be?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be in the summer. It's like 24-hour daylight, but obviously it's very dangerous. And then after that, we plan to possibly row across the Pacific Ocean. Now, all of these things are very dangerous, obviously, and we're going to have to get a lot of certifications. But that's what's next for me, man, is chasing.
How long would that take to cross an ocean?
Well, it just depends on which ocean you cross and at what time of year. But most likely, if we do one of these open ocean races, we're most likely going to do the Pacific, which will be from California to Hawaii. And that can take anywhere between 30 to 40 some days. And the very interesting about this is I'm going to film a lot of this and most likely make a documentary out of it. One,
Jimmy, can we just talk about this?
Hold on, wait. One, everybody else knows how to row, but right. I've never rowed before. So that's where this is so interesting, is it's going to be comical because obviously I'm very competitive. My boy, he's beyond competitive. So it'll just be us basically talking shit. Also me trying to learn how to row. You know, I mean, right. I've never sustained rowing. I've never rowed in the open ocean. I've never been on a rowboat. All of these things are factors. But where I think this works in my favor is, one, we're chasing world records and we're doing it for a great cause. But two, if I can row across an ocean, sailing a big yacht is going to be easy. So that's
your motivation.
Yeah. It's like practice for the solo sailing. And that's kind of the way I see it. And, you know, it just really gives me something to look forward to and, you know, something that athletically I can push myself in a new direction. You know, and I don't have to take hits anymore. I can just sit there and just get to work.
What the bro, me and Mark was like, you know, we do like these family vacations, whatever, bro. We were in the Caribbean on this yacht, and they, you know how they like dock it. You know, whatever that is, they dock it, let's call it 300-400 yards out from the beach, right? Depending on where it's at. Me and him were like, hey man, you think you can make it to the other side? So we swam to the beach and we're like dog ass tired after a 10-minute swim.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're trying to row for 30 to 40 days consecutively.
Yeah.
That's absurdity. I love
it. What's also interesting about it is it pushes you in every way, mentally, physically. You know, we are going to only get 2-hour breaks. So, you know, basically you're off for 2 hours. And I think that means you don't get another time off. So you row for 6 and you're off another 2. And so over cumulative time, I think you're getting like 6 hours of sleep a day, maybe 5. But within your 2 hours, you have your responsibilities. You have to clean, obviously do some, it depends on what your job is as far as tracking goes, moving. Obviously, you got to get some sleep during that period. So not only is it challenging like that, but it's also you're dealing with a lot of sleep deprivation. You're dealing with, if you're doing the Pacific, you're dealing with storms, obviously, and being on a rowboat at night. So that's why I believe this will just prepare me for the sailing. I'll be able to use what I've learned in sailing and flying as far as weather and tracking to go to this rowing thing. But
sailing, you're like sort of, you're by yourself on this, right? So really it's just you tracking you.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Rowing, it's literally like a team. And as much as I love my teammates, I couldn't imagine being like me and, you know, Carl and Peyton Turner and Malcolm Roach for 30 straight days.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not catching sleep like that. Somebody's getting thrown off the rowboat.
Well, this is some of the most challenging parts of it is obviously the team personalities matter. You know, we're going to do a bunch of team building activities just to make sure we're all the right people to be on the boat. But then also you get super close to each other, obviously, because there's no bathroom on this boat. There's just going to be a carbon fiber bucket. So, you know, like,
whoa, didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah.
Keep rowing. Yeah. 1 second. I got to take a piss. Keep rowing. I'm going. Wait, I can't. Somebody's getting pissed on. I'm calling it now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, imagine rough seas, big storm. You know, this is going to be the hardest thing I've ever signed up for. It'll be the hardest thing I've ever done. It'll be the most challenging. But I believe that, you know, obviously after I get done with this, and obviously being able to do this with, you know, one of my best friends and to share this experience with him and to obviously do it for a great cause, I think there's nothing better I could sign up for immediately right after football's done.
Sign me up, man. Facts. I mean, when you say what's next, most people are thinking, you know, are like the PE guys. They're like private equity or like, oh, I'm gonna start flipping houses. Oh, I'm gonna get into, you know, whatever that next phase is, start a podcast. Boom. And here you are like, yeah, I'm going to go 30, 40 days in the Arctic.
Well, you know, obviously with business, man, I've been always active. You know, I don't think people.
But that's not something you picked up. Yeah. That's something that's, you know, you've been on.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So I'm obviously going to keep doing that and scaling all of the things that I'm involved with all over the place.
I'll just be waiting for my phone call. It won't come, but it's okay. I'll just
no,
eventually he's going to call.
It will.
Between you and you and between you and John Vilma, I don't know who keeps more secrets from me. I'll be like, bro, just I have my liquid.
No. I've got some big things down the pipeline, man. I'll definitely keep you up to date.
Before I get you out here, man, you've been a tight end who's played at such at the highest level at being all pro, you know, pro bowler. You've done so many miraculous things, seen so many playoffs. Who do you got winning this year? We're getting down to the final.
It's a hard one because there's people I would love to win. I would rather.
There's four teams left. But, I hear you.
I mean, man, I would love to see Baltimore do it. I would love to see, I think personally, Lamar, I feel like he's gotten so much flack and so many people just don't believe in him and believe in the way that he plays. But I think the way he's been playing, especially as of late, is just special. And I think he's done a lot to change the game and continue to evolve the game. But, how unbelievable would be a Baltimore versus Lions Super Bowl, which is something that no one would have ever predicted.
No doubt.
Ever.
Ticket sales have been going crazy in Detroit. I don't know if you've seen it, like the highest retail value tickets.
Dude, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, because I played against the Lions over the last however long, and those things were free. And but not anymore, man. It's just unbelievable what Dan's been able to do out there. Obviously turning that place around, changing the culture, changing the environment, and just having people understand how important winning is, and just kind of turning the team into the same exact blue collar, hard, gritty type of community.
Dan Campbell said, "We're gonna crawl and if we need to bite kneecaps off."
Exactly.
2 years later, they
he wasn't lying. Man. He wasn't lying. People thought he was crazy when he said it, but he wasn't lying. He wasn't lying because that's what they're doing for sure.
Looking at him like, "What are you talking about?" Nah, he's from a different era. He believes in doing all that he's saying. Like he 100%. Actually played the game for 10 years. Like 100%. If there's coaches that can't say that, he said 100%. It and he meant it. 100%. And the team bought in, and he would go get guys like Chauncey Gardner Johnson, he would, he would drafted a guy like Aiden Hutchinson playing lights out, just like a nitty gritty worker. He brought in Aaron Glenn AG was a D coordinator DB coach for us. And now DC over at Detroit, man, great dude, but he has that old school mentality. He's played and they when he says something, be like, no, that is probably gonna work. No, he's seen that before.
100%. And, I think there's something to be said about that. Bringing the NFL back to a little bit, some of that old school stuff, we got introduced to it as young players.
That's all we knew.
On a crazy level. My rookie year was the last.
Had Jeremy Shockey as your OG.
Exactly.
The last of the rock stars that you were like.
Oh, man.
Hearing legends about him.
I mean, first it was two padded practices a day training camps in New Orleans with Sean Payton. That lets you know what time it is. It was absolute hell. I was calling home like, I don't know if I could do this. Because Shockey, first off, being his rookie was like iconic almost because they just won a Super Bowl. He was the rock star. He was the rock star. I mean, everybody wanted to be around him. I remember just leaving a bar and running down the street because people are chasing us down the street. Like rock star shit, man. It was so cool to experience. But also Shockey is hilarious. And I remember one morning he was like, "Hey big dog, yes, seems like my back's gonna be going out today, bud." I was like, "What?" Bro, we're like,
got all these reps.
Bro, we're in stretch. This dude's back tightens up, just like he said. And it was like the first practice too. So I had to go with the ones, twos, and threes. First time I was in the one huddle, just didn't know what he was talking about. And then we came back for that 2 or 3 o'clock practice in the dead of heat. Another 2 hour practice, all me, absolutely brutal.
Come get this work. All right. Exactly. All right. Speaking of Shockey, who's in your tight end Rushmore? If there was to be a tight end Rushmore.
My tight end Rushmore?
Your tight end Rushmore.
As far as from my career or complete?
Complete. However you want to take that.
I mean, I'm going to say on who influenced my career the most.
Okay.
As far as the people had true influence on my career. Obviously, Jeremy Shockey. Mm-hmm. I was his rookie. And then I would definitely say Ben Watson Ben Watson was a big part of that, you know, just kind of how he was, you know, how kind of his approach to the game and just how he operated. And then I was, you know, obviously blessed enough to play with Mercedes Lewis. You know, he's
strong as hands at like year 27.
So it's insane what he's doing. And, you know, I don't think he gets even enough credit for it. It's like, what year is this? It was 18 or something.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I don't know.
Something crazy. And he's in the, I mean, he's in the trenches. You know, he's right. He's blocking.
He's putting hands on. He's not really a receiver tight end anymore. He's
no blocking. No. And it's, I mean, it's just like unbelievable to see. I mean, truly, truly unbelievable to see, man. You know, those were the guys that kind of had the biggest influence on my career. Obviously, Dave Thomas, a lot of people don't know who he is, but he's the one who actually taught me the like Dave mental Thomas. Part.
Yeah. University of Texas.
Yeah. Won a national championship, won a Super Bowl, but he's the one who taught me the mental aspect of the game as far as understanding coverage, understanding all these things. And then Shockey taught me the attitude. You know, I remember something happened. There was like a drop in practice and Shockey ran up to me and he said some other words. I'm not going to say on podcast, but he basically boiled it down to, you're from the U and we don't walk around and do like that. He said, we hold ourselves to a higher standard. And from that day on.
Yes, sir.
No. I carried myself like I was untouchable. And and sure enough, I think it translates to the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll take that. I appreciate you tapping in, you know, Mr. Pro Bowler, Mr. All Pro, Mr. 60,000 freaking feet in the air, flying planes, helicopters, now wanting to row across the oceans. Nautical miles being added on to the experiences. I appreciate you so much, not only for the tight end that you are, but just like the overall phenomenal person that you are and everything that, you know, that you've done over your career will probably never get overlooked because you're a Saints Hall of Famer. You know, your character has spoken so much volumes by even coming back and if this is it, finishing your career with the Saints. You know, it's always black and gold forever, but I'm a Jimmy Graham fan, you know, I'm a big Jimmy G guy. And it's not Garoppolo, it's Jimmy Graham. It's Hemi Graham, if you will, you know? So I appreciate you tapping in with me on Off the Edge podcast. My guy, Jimmy Graham, I appreciate him for everything that he's done. I can't help but get excited for him to finish up his, you know, if that's the end of his career, a hell of a career. You know, will always be a Saints Hall of Famer for all those 1,000-yard seasons that he put together, all those Pro Bowls, the All Pros, him and Drew Brees, clearly the most tight end quarterback duo to ever really be together until this new wave. You know, he alluded to the Niners, which was George Kittle, of course, as a tight end, and you know he's had a myriad, so you can't say he's the duo there. But Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce, you know, that's what it was like watching Drew Brees and Jimmy Graham. It was just like, there's nothing stopping them. You know where the ball is going. You can't stop it. It was a beauty. It was a thing of beauty to see. So I just appreciate you guys for tapping in with Off the Edge. I appreciate everybody who's ever listened to an episode and everybody who ever will listen to an episode. Thank you so much. I want to thank Jimmy for coming on to the show, of course. With that being said, I just want to ask you for, you know, a 5-star review. Tap in with us. Leave us a follow. You know, check us out on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it. That's my spiel. I thank you so much for sticking with us for all on Off the Edge, the podcast with me, your host, Cam J. God bless. Peace.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.